Okay, good afternoon, everyone. Can you hear me in the back? Okay. Welcome to what we hope will not be as sad a panel as some might anticipate, given all of the discussions about harassment lately. We're going to try and keep this positive and honest as best we can. This is a panel on being a woman in science and technology. For those of you who don't know, I'm Dr. Pamela Gay. I am an astronomer working on a variety of different NASA projects, and I do computational this, that, and the everything. So I'm going to moderate since I speak tech and science. And with me is a wonderful group of women. I'm going to start with Trina and ask each of you to introduce yourselves and tell us what your day job is.
Okay. So hi, everybody. My name is Trina Ray, and I work at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena. I work on the Cassini-Huygens mission to Saturn, and I have recently got a promotion there, so yay. I'm the deputy for the science planning and sequencing team, which is all the folks who do all of the negotiations with the scientists, and also we do all the commanding of the spacecraft. And in addition to that, I have a side job that I've had for many years, which is I'm the chair of the Titan Orbiter Science Team, which is the group of folks that decide what we're going to do at every Titan flyby. So that's my current job.
Cool, I have to follow that. Awesome. My name is Veronica Belmont. I've been working as a tech reporter for the last 10 years or so. I've done a lot of different shows for CNET Networks, Discovery Digital, currently working on 2 STEM-related pilots for television. And I consider myself a science and technology communicator, so I try to translate, you know, difficult concepts to an audience that I think really benefits from that information.
I'm Pamela Vickers. I live here in Atlanta. I work for a company called Big Nerd Ranch, where we do software development and training. I do consulting primarily, where I write web applications.
Okay, and I'm Kim Stedman. I'm an engineer at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. I will do this quick because I have so many jobs. I work on the Opportunity rover, the Curiosity rover, and I work on the Cassini mission.
And We want to leave lots of time for questions, but before we do that, I want to hit on some of the big things that help keep women in this field. And one of the things that's been long identified as helping women is having either role models or mentors or people who are there saying, you go. And I'd like, and I'm going to start with you, Veronica, just to throw it around to different people. What got you inspired?
I have to say, probably when I was a kid, I had a fantastic science teacher who was a woman, and she really enabled me to feel comfortable about sharing my passions. And, you know, I was the only girl that stayed after school with the science club and, you know, made all sorts of crazy, like, ball-bearing roller coasters and, you know, made little computer programs. And you know, at that young age, I think it's really important to have someone tell you that it is okay to be a woman and to be interested in these things that, you know, at least back then were still traditionally thought of as being more masculine traits. I was a total tomboy growing up and video gamer and I think that was important. Also Molly Wood at CNET, because, you know, I didn't even know I wanted to be a technology reporter until I started working there as an audio producer. And I just, her ability to speak her mind and be able to talk about these topics and not take crap from anyone, I think really inspired me and made me feel like it was something I could do.
What about you, Trina?
So absolutely, it was science fiction. That was my inspiration. It was Star Trek. It was my friends who were totally into reading science fiction in high school, and we just it was just part of our little clique, which was, you know, it was the support, I guess, of my friends that were all into the same thing that I was into. Some of them were girls and some of them were guys, and then, you know, you go get into high school and then you go to the computer club, and yes, the Boba Fett fan club. I was fan club, because if you're going to be a member of the Boba Fett fan club,
it's a really specific fan club for a high school.
So that's really was the inspiration. In my family, nobody in my family is science or tech, so it was very much, you know, they're entrepreneurs or businessmen or appraisers or farmers. And so it's always been like, Trina, what is it that you do? Are you really part of the family? But so it was really friends and science fiction that was the inspiration.
That's pretty. I find for me it was the original Battlestar Galactica. I went down the rabbit hole of, are Apollo and Athena actually sister and brother in Greek mythology? Wait, Greek mythology leads you to constellations, and once I got to the constellations, I never came back. So there's wild paths. What about you, Kim?
Oh, I didn't know I was next. So my big inspiration was the Apollo moon landings. So when I grew up, I was really obsessed with those and read everything I could about them. And then, of course, I watched Star Trek, the original series. And then there was that small movie in 1977, which changed everything, Star Wars. And after that, I knew exactly what I wanted to do. And my grandmother was my biggest supporter. She was a third grade teacher, but she told me it doesn't matter, you know, what you want to do, you can do it if you just set your mind to it. Mm-hmm. And so I remember when I was in college, and I just can't do this. I'm not smart enough to do this. And she goes, yes, you are. When I went to college, I had a 2-year-old at home. You have no children. You should be able to do it easily. So I'm like, okay, fair point. I'll just shut up and do it.
Yeah. Well, for me, I never really questioned whether science or computers were a girly or boyish thing. I was homeschooled, so I had no one tell me I wasn't cool except for the neighborhood kids. and my mother had a background in mechanical engineering, so she always encouraged me to, well, if you're going to take a math class, why not take the more advanced math class when I finally did go to school. So really my mother and just the environment of not knowing I wasn't supposed to be interested in those things was...
Actually, it's funny to both Pamela and Kim's point. I go to CES every year for tech reporting, and I would complain about how hard it was and how like exhausted I was, and my mom would be like, "Yeah, try doing that in 4-inch heels, pregnant with you." Like, okay.
Yeah, it's like shame.
Yeah. And uphill and snow both directions.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So this room is going to be kind of unique for, I think, many of us during our con experience, because there are so many women in the audience, which is awesome.
Yay!
And the panel is like all women, go figure. Yeah. But this is the type of thing that I know it always catches me off guard to walk into a room and not be like one of the only 2 or 3 women in the room. Is this something that you notice? And when was it most shocking for you to notice you weren't the only woman in the room?
Don't make me go first on this one.
I'll go first. I know the first time I was in a, this is a little opposite though. The first time I was in a meeting where I noticed everyone in the meeting was a woman, I looked around and I thought, something unusual. And I said, just a minute, excuse me. Do you notice one thing about us? We all have hair. and like, what do you mean? I'm like, we're all women. It was just shocking. In operations at JPL is where you really do find a lot of women. So it's not unusual to have several women in the meeting, but when you involve management, a lot of times management equals men. And so that one time when we did have a mix of management and regular people and we were all women, it was amazing.
Yeah, I would have to say I am a bit of a counter. So when I go into a room or something like that, a lot of times I'll be counting. And, you know, so sort of when you're on the Cassini project, that's a pretty good percentage, about 25% of the group around you is women. And sometimes you can be in a meeting that's all women all the way up to the management. And also on Cassini, we've got two of the 12 instruments, 2 of the instruments are run by women. The project scientist is a woman, the very top scientist. And I think, very interestingly, the very top spacecraft manager, the spacecraft engineer, is a woman. So you kind of get used to about that 25%, and then I went into management. And the first time I went to a big management meeting at JPL and I started counting, I'm like, 12%? What is happening today? So I guess with me, it's the counting. I like to have hard data, and even though it's just anecdotal because it's all just me, so when you actually start counting it is when you really notice. The other interesting thing that happened with me and when I noticed it is I go to school and I hang out with a whole bunch of guys in college in physics, and then I get grad school of physics and astronomy, and then I went back for a high school reunion and I was back with my high school girlfriends, and so it was all women, but the style of communication was just different. And I thought, gosh, they all sound so so odd. What's going on? And I didn't realize I had adopted so many professional communication styles until I was immersed in an environment where there were none of those, and it was an old familiar environment, but by that time I had just transitioned to this different style of communication. And so that's, I would have to say that two times I've really noticed it.
Well, I have a very belated reaction once where, so there's a group in Atlanta, if you're in Atlanta, called Rails Girls Atlanta that helps you get started in web development in Rails. If anyone here is interested, you can find us. But we have technical talks, and we record some of them if we have the technology working for us. So I remember one time we posted the link saying, here's the talk that we did last month if you want to watch it. And someone responded on Twitter saying, wow, it's such a difference to hear a group of women laugh at something technical. And it was, I went back because I was there, so I hadn't watched the video. And I thought, I don't know if I know what that sounds like. So I went and I watched it, and I realized I'd never been in a big room of women laughing at something, you know, I don't know, last time I was in a big room of women, honestly, but it was a group of women laughing at something that you're just so used to hearing the low rumble of laughter. So it was really a special moment where I realized, oh, that's something I've never heard before.
I still don't really have a great answer. Go ahead.
So one of the reasons I asked this question, this may trigger a solution, and it may simply be that you haven't gotten to stumble into one of these situations, is I went to a science conference last November, and I'm so used to being one of the 10% women in the room that I don't notice if I'm the only woman in the room anymore. And it has, just as Trina said, totally affected how I communicate. I ride horses, which is a women's sport, and I go out to the barn and I don't understand. I understand. It's such a different environment. And when I went to this astronomy conference last year and realized this conference was 50% women, it was like, it felt like it was majority women. Where are the men? This is so, how did this happen? And it's gotten to the point that I'm blind to situations of being the minority. And I'm not sure what that means, other than we, at a certain level, we still look and act like women, sort of, kind of, mostly, sort of. But we're adopting the mainstream cultures of our fields. And I'd have to ask, are any of you still, when you first walk into the room, do you have the holy crap, I'm the only woman experience anymore? Is it just sort of like, meh?
Yeah, when I was doing tech reporting full time, like, you just kind of get used to it. Like, it doesn't really, I mean, there's definitely other women in the industry and people who are at events and things like that, but it would not be uncommon for me at all to go to a dinner sponsored by someone and be the only woman there. And I think I did just get used to it because they're your peers and they're your, you know, reporters in arms. But it's, you know, I think you do get really used to it. And maybe I just haven't had that watershed moment yet, because working in gaming and working in technology, it's just been, that's been my experience.
And so this sort of gets to the point of, how do we deal in a day-to-day basis with, I still get mistaken for being my own secretary on a regular basis. My favorite moment of failure of all time is, they assume you must be an educator instead of the tech person. And so I'm going to name drop because it's the best example, please forgive me. I was on stage with Neil deGrasse Tyson, who is another PhD astronomer, who does not actively do research anymore because he spends too much time educating the world, and I'm cool with that. And we go on stage, and he gets introduced as America's astronomer, Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson. And I get introduced as astronomy educator Pamela Gay. And it's like, okay, there's no little kids in here, are there? Okay, so my internal dialogue was, well, fuck you, I'm a publishing researcher. But there's this built-in set of assumptions that we have to keep facing, which is why my name placard is Bitch Placard of Dr. Pamela Gay. You're going to know I went to college for 10 years. How do you guys find yourselves fighting back against the constant, oh, where's Mr., where's, oh, wait, you're a woman, or getting called up Mr. Stedman, all of these stupid things, the dear sirs emails, how do you fight back?
I do have a good one for that, a funny story. I was at Tokyo Game Show working for PlayStation for their online magazine, and I was dressed like literally like this, and this guy walks up to me and goes, oh, who are you a booth babe for? And I was like, oh, really? First of all, this is the worst booth babe costume of all time. Like, thanks, I guess. And I was like, no, I'm a reporter. I'm here working for Sony. And he was like, oh. I was like, wow, that just happened. So that was probably the worst instance of that I've probably received. But yeah, my co-host for many years was a man, Patrick Norton. And so a lot of the times things got directed to him. And I'm like, no, we're co-hosts. Like, we do the show together. Yeah. Like, you know, I'm on this show also. I have my own thoughts and opinions. And, you know, it's hard. It's very frustrating.
I have a good story there. I wasn't mistaken as a booth babe, but I went to dinner with my new coworkers at a company called High Groove, and I was the first lady developer they had hired. And we did monthly team dinners at that point, and we would all go. It was fun, and we had, for the start, it was just supposed to be company, and then afterwards, significant others could meet up, and we could maybe go do something fun. Oh. So I was eating dinner with my coworkers, and one of the girlfriends of one of the other developers showed up, and she was just talking, hanging out, and then I said something. She turned to me and said, oh, you belong here. I thought you were a girlfriend. No.
Do you guys still face these things? You have Carolyn Porco fighting a lot of battles for you, but how do you fight them for...
Yeah, you know, so I don't really have a good story or even bits of wisdom for this one. Part of it is just I've been working on it my whole professional career, right? I'm loud and I talk fast, and
I had never noticed that. Yeah. Never.
Yeah, never. According to my ECAP, I have an aggressive communication style. So often I will miss it, right? So these things will happen, and I will just blow right through it and right past it, right, and not even notice it.
Over the top of it.
Or over the top of it.
Yeah, you rise above it. Yeah.
Well, sadly, though, what happens is that it doesn't even sort of make contact with my brain, right? It just, oh, you know, they thought I was the secretary, went, ah, you know, and off I go. So outside of work, actually, is where I've had instances where being a woman has... and then I guess I've gotten a little, when you work at JPL, you kind of get used to just a little bit higher quality of communication style and effectiveness. And sometimes when I go out into the world and I'm working either just with regular folks out in the world or sometimes with my political groups, I find, wow, you guys really have trouble communicating. And so I have to, I work at it there. And that's when I find that... the fact that I'm a woman who is somebody who often wants to get things organized, get it moving, let's get it done, let's take actions, let's move, that's when I find things are a little bit different.
Well, my experiences are sometimes you run into men who, yeah, if you're a woman, they want to intimidate you. And it's always fun when my husband's there because they try and talk to him, and then they talk down to me, and he's just waiting. and then, you know, sometimes when they totally ignore me, they'll talk to him and he'll go, well, I don't handle any of that. You have to talk to my wife. Yeah. And there I am. And then when they try and intimidate me and then they find out what I do for a living and they're like, really? Yeah, that's what I do. I drive rovers on Mars. What do you do? You know, and they're like, I've got to go now. Yeah, of course you do.
I have a very similar. I ride horses. This is apparently going to be a recurring theme.
Yeah.
When I was in graduate school, I worked part time because when you're a graduate student who rides horses, you have no money. So I mucked stalls to keep my horses in feed. And there was all hands, everyone at the barn cleaning and rebuilding and roofing and things one weekend. And we had a jousting troop that rode at our barn. And one of the jousters decided, ooh, cute young female, I shall hit upon her. And his opening line was, so what do you do for a living? And I said, well, I'm an astrophysicist. He's like, no, really, what? And this went on the entire day. And apparently, as soon as I left, because he'd been, he needed to die by the end of the day, because he kept, but they're like, no, really, seriously, whatever it is, it's okay, you can tell me what, really, dude, I'm a PhD astrophysics student at the University of Texas. And when I left, the barn owner, whose dad is the person who solved the only solution for a three-body problem and had been on my dissertation committee, and who knew full well what I did, schooled this guy. And apparently he was so upset he got in his car and tried to race me down to apologize. But you deal with these things, and I think that the trainer's response is actually kind of interesting and something I want to bring up for a moment. We get so used to it that most of the time we respond with, no, 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 it's me, it's okay. And we make the person feel okay with the mistake they made.
I don't.
I don't feel that burden.
And by we, I mean people in our field. And so I saw when I was saying this a lot of nods of people in the room, because when we're starting out, a lot of us, and I'm still junior faculty, so if like a tenured neckbeard comes in, and if you work in a university, you know what I mean. If a tenured neckbeard, gray hair everywhere, comes in and makes a mistake, I'm not going to fight that, because really I'm baby professor. But what I'm finding is women are starting to find their voice to say, No, what you just said wasn't cool. And there was a great example the other day where one of my friends who's an instructional technologist pointed out to a professor, here's some software that you can use in your classroom so that students can ask questions and not feel that they're going to get picked on or anything. And the professor responded, that will be great for people who have a lot of baggage, like women and minorities. And she said she didn't think about responding, and then she's like, I don't think being a woman's baggage. And he apparently paused and reformatted a little bit, and he came back with, people who have extra layers like women and minorities? And she was like, okay, that, yes, we can go with that. And so she got this guy to change how he thinks, because when you are a woman or a minority, or even worse, both at once, you deal with a lot of stigmas, and it's not baggage, it's just you have more shit to get through some days. Mm-hmm. And how are you finding, there's the no, you're just wrong approach, which I think you take the straightforward approach a lot from your reaction, Kim.
Well, I've been told I'm blunt. Oh, and I've also been told my inner monologue is broken. Because I'll say something in a meeting and my boss will turn to me and he'll say, Kim, your inner monologue's broken again. Oh, I'll work on that.
So what other strategies have you found when someone is letting their negative social bias leak?
Yeah, I had an experience recently, and it was related to all this, the harassment in gaming that's been going on recently. And these two guys, these MRAs, that's a
men's
topic for...
Men's rights activists, that's all I'm saying to explain it.
Topic of discussion for another day. These two guys kind of ganged up on me about something that I had posted. And then later, I got an email, a really nice email from this guy who was like, you know, I'm so sorry, those two guys are my friends, I feel really horrible that they did this to you, like blah blah blah, like they just don't understand. I'm like, that's great that you're telling me this, it's great that you're apologizing to me, tell them that. I don't need to hear it, they need to hear it from you, that this shit is not okay. Because that's the only way that this kind of stuff is going to get better, when people hear it from their peers, because otherwise they just, you know, they coagulate into this thing that's just like anger and rage and hate. And I was like, can you imagine that monster, what that monster looks like? It's like,
I'm looking up a quote related to this.
Yeah, and I was like, it only works if they hear it from people that they're not, because they're not gonna, their walls are up, their defensive walls are up. Anything you say is not gonna penetrate that wall, no matter how much sense it makes. But if it comes from their friends, whose their wall is not in the same place, it gets through, I think, in a much more meaningful way.
I think I'm still figuring that one out for myself. I don't have a good answer.
So I would say one thing that when I'm in a meeting and there is another woman there, I am generally, I want to make sure, there have been times when I feel like women are not heard as much as men just because of the sort of the background culture. And so sometimes if there's just one other woman there who says something like, well, that was interesting, Kim. Can you, you know, I guess I have a question about that. Can you elaborate? And then you can give them sort of an extra chance, because that happened with me when I was more junior, you know, a more senior scientist. I had something to say, and shockingly for me, I didn't just, you know, yeah, and take over. And so I got the opportunity to say it and make a better impression on the whole group because I sort of had the support in the room. And so I've sort of thought about that as I've gone on, and I've always tried to make sure that that opportunity happens, especially if you see a dynamic happening where the women are not speaking as much.
That's a huge problem, I think, in our industry is that, and I think it's just with women in general. I mean, women need to be better allies for each other in a greater sense. And, you know, I think there's, especially in my industry, which is more like entertainment related, I think there's a lot of competition. And I think it's more beneficial for everyone to really work together for the greater good instead of feeling so competitive. And so, you know, nothing's worse than women, you know, fighting against each other.
One thing that I've noticed is, so I guess maybe I do have a little bit of an answer, is sometimes you'll see a conversation happening and someone keeps trying to say something, but someone a little bit more aggressive in the conversation will just start talking, and then they wait and they never get that chance. So I've noticed, or whenever I notice that, I try to make space in the conversation. It's like a little shoehorn. Like, I don't actually have anything to say. I'll just, because I can be aggressive in a conversation, I will just jump in, make space, and allow them to have a moment to talk. So I think that falls in line with being better allies is, mm-hmm. you know, if there's someone, you know, woman or not, that has something to say in a conversation, whether it's, you know, a fun conversation or an important one, if you have the ability to jump in and make space for them, it's helpful, because then you get to hear more of the conversation mm-hmm. instead of just the same people talking the whole time.
Okay, so I finally found a quote. A lot of women are starting to come out and be public about the harassment and the hate that they experience because of what they're doing. And I don't think that anyone has experienced this in a more horrible way online than maybe Anita Sarkeesian. Mm-hmm. She worked to do a Kickstarter a couple of years ago to talk about female tropes in video games. And there was this amazing quote from the New Statesman about what she experienced. And after this, I want to go on to talking about how we find allies instead of focusing on the harassment we felt. Because let's just face it, that's a universal. We've all been harassed. So let's let her experience speak for us. And this is in reference to her Kickstarter about doing videos on female tropes. Even if you don't like the idea or don't believe that women are poorly represented in games, then isn't it fine for other people to give money to do something they believe in? Except some kind of bastard klaxon went off somewhere in the dank, moist depths of the internet. An angry, misogynist bat signal, if you will. In Sarkeesian's own words, the intimidation and harassment effort has included a torrent of misogyny and hate speech on my YouTube video, repeated vandalizing on my Wikipedia page about me, organized efforts to flag my YouTube videos as terrorism, as well as many threatening messages sent through Twitter, Facebook, Kickstarter, email, and my own website. These messages and comments have included everything from the typical sandwich and kitchen jokes to threats of violence, death, sexual assault, and rape.
Oh yeah, it's real bad for her and Zoe Quinn and all the, like, I mean, everyone, literally everyone has gotten something like that in their career if you are a woman. It's just a fact. And, you know, men get crap too. It happens. But there's something like, if you do not have, not this panel maybe, but it's like, just, if you have an opinion, it doesn't mean that doesn't you get rape threats and death threats. Like, how does
men
that make any sense?
That.
How is that balanced? Like, if you have a point of view that doesn't agree with someone, like, I don't understand it, why it makes people so angry.
Well, and the other side of that is if you admit to these problems existing, they threaten to ruin your careers, to take you down.
I'm literally terrified of tweeting anything in support of these women. I have done it, but I'm scared. I am literally scared that I will be doxxed, that my accounts will be compromised, that I will receive threats, that they will come to my home. Like, it's a real fear. And like, just the fact that I can't even support them, and that male game developers and male game journalists can't support them without receiving the same kind of treatment, like, what the f- you know, like,
yeah, we've already determined it's okay to swear. There will be an explicit diet. So having dealt with a lot of this, the way that I've handled it is, first of all, I know people in network security, and there have been a few times when I've gotten threats or been like, here are all of the headers. And I've actually had to talk to people at the FBI, and it's reached the point where I know that there are enough allies out there in the official channels, and you have to know ahead of time that they're allies, because not everyone in the official channels are allies, that I know that they have my back. And the thing that has also helped is when I started talking about my experiences, because I was known as someone other than just a whiny bitch who bitches about sexual harassment, which is one of the risks you run. Because I'm known for my astronomy, I had people come forward and say, if you need a legal advocacy fund, we have your back. And that gave me my voice. And the thing that I think meant the most to me was getting an email from another podcaster who I only sort of knew because of events like this, saying, if this ever happens again, do this perfectly natural thing that you don't often do, and if I see it, I will come and make sure you are safe. And finding these allies is empowering. And I'd ask, how do we find allies? Because we as women can't fight this alone. We have to change, we have to do like you said and tell the guy, dude, you need to go school your friends and not apologize for them to me. How do we find the allies and make it so that we're not fighting alone anymore?
Being at panels like this, yeah, is a good start. Social media.
Yeah, I believe in social media.
Yeah, I like social media too. It's a good place to find advocates and allies, like you said.
I think you're the youngest on the panel, which is fine.
Possibly. Someone's got to be.
Yeah.
We're not going to talk about the oldest, though.
As you're starting out, and I know you've started for a long time, how are you going from the crap, I didn't know allies were a thing I needed, to identifying?
Well, I do work at a great company where everyone is very interested in diversity in general. They've been very supportive in helping me get a few women's programming groups started. And they've realized that it's not something that will passively happen. You can't just say, well, we'll get some programs in place and more women will come in, and when there are more women, things will be better for women. It doesn't work that way. There has to be active steps that you take. So I think it's just about putting yourself as much as you can around people who are reasonable, good people, and then having open conversations with them. Sometimes the conversations are uncomfortable. I think that's one thing, that if you realize this is happening and you can tell someone, like if you have one coworker that maybe you can tell, or one friend or anybody, it's happening to someone else too that isn't comfortable saying it. So that's one thing that I've kind of tried to do, because like I said, I was one of the first one of the first ladies at my company. So I realized that I wanted more, and if I wanted more, I needed to have a good experience so they could have a good experience. So at any time that you are comfortable speaking up, do so. Even if it's to someone that you don't know has, you know, any actual leverage, just having someone else know something is happening goes a long way, because then they can be more informed in conversations they have. Mm-hmm. So it really does start with your experience, sharing it with other people, because other people are having something similar going on.
I think it's important to realize that you have allies at different levels. Yeah. You have allies that are peers, and that's a great place to have an ally, right? Because that's somebody that you can just share with, you can share sort of without for you don't have to worry about the repercussions of that. You also, it's important to realize that you have allies above you in the institution that are already in place, no matter probably where you work, even a small company or a large company. There are people who, it is their job to care about this. And to talk to them, there's no harm to that. So just knowing, but then also knowing that there are allies up and over, right? So somebody who is not your direct manager, but somebody who is completely outside of your management chain. So even if, because if the if something's happening in your management chain, so for in our area, you know, we have the HR department or something like that. So there are allies up and over, and then there's allies external. So to just recognize that that no matter what situation you're in, there's sort of peers up, up and over and out, and every one of those groups might be the one who can really help out. And just to realize that that they're there, I think, is half the battle, to know that.
And one of the things that you have to also be aware of that I just want to lay out there as a caution is there are people who are correctly labeled as advocates who will bury your butt. So having that network of peers and building outward from there, knowing the safe paths, is extremely important.
What do you mean by that?
So to give a very specific example, the person at my university that you had to talk to about sexual harassment issues would take the letter he asked you to write up very nicely, saying it would be kept in complete confidence, and would then broadly distribute it to the men who'd been harassing you, who were then in a position to file grievances. Not an advocate, labeled as an advocate. So you have to be aware of these issues, just like at certain universities. I knew my undergraduate institution, this was not a problem I had to deal with, but I heard other women talking amongst themselves about, if you're date raped, don't go to this cop, go to this cop. And so, unfortunately, you do have to know these things. But advocacy is happening, and we are fighting for one another. And you brought up a good point about how panels like this are part of the chain. And you'd mentioned girl coders. And this is one of the things I think we're seeing more and more of, is there's the women in astronomy, the women in planetary science, women engineers, girl coders, all of these programs that are building up to allow us to walk into a room that's dominated by women. And social media, which I think everyone mentioned is a powerful thing, is when you're the only woman in your group, this is how we find one another. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How have you, I'm someplace where I'm on the outskirts a lot of these things, and I know many of you are on the inside. Can you talk about what it's like to find and build and be part of these groups? Go.
Oh, sure. Okay. So
she went going, and I'm not going to stop that energy.
Yeah, so I guess it's a little off to the side a bit, but I also work in sci-fi and fantasy as a podcaster for the past 8 years, and you know, being able to find like-minded women who are interested in sci-fi and fantasy, I think has been really powerful for me. And so we have, you know, my one of my groups, Vaginal Fantasy, is predominantly women, but it's just such an awesome community because we can talk about anything. And, you know, and it feels really empowering. And, you know, for such, you know, genre fiction being, you know, predominantly written and read by males for so many years, it's just nice to find that community within a community to feed off of and have support with.
That wasn't mine.
Not me.
It may
well,
have been
it's
me.
Been fun. Okay. It's been fun being a part of the group I mentioned earlier, Rails Girls Atlanta, because it's been growing. There's at least one person in here that has been a member. And so it's been fun to see that grow, but I've also seen the need to beyond just about programming. So we actually started having just a monthly social hour where there's no topic whatsoever. We just all show up at this one place and we talk about careers, we talk about, you know, movies we've seen. There's no organized, it's just people show up. There's no even real RSVP. It's just, you know, on the first Monday of the month to go to this place, and you'll probably find some like-minded women and maybe a tag-along significant other or two who are just kind of lurking in the shadows, not sure if they're allowed to talk. But it's one of those things where you don't realize how good it feels to be around other people that have similar interests and have maybe similar career paths until you are exposed to it. So I initially kind of started the Rails Girls organization because I thought, oh, this would be a great thing I could help people with. But I've gotten so much more out of it than helping people. I've gotten friends, and I've gotten a community. So if there's any sort of career affiliation that you are drawn to, there probably is a group. And some people have opinions about if safe spaces make you look more different or more weak, but those people are dumb because they don't understand how good it feels. So if you have a group like that around you, find them, go hang out. If not, maybe start one, because you'll get a lot out of it.
Yeah, so I guess my take on this is I've been a professional, working professional for 25 years at one institution, and it's a big institution. I mean, NASA is a big organization and JPL is a big organization, and so my advice is really no different for the young men who join my group as the young women who join my group. It's networking is important. You started on your first day. Professionally, every person that you've ever worked for, you should have, you should keep sort of a running log, because someday you may need a job and you might want to go back to those people and you want to remember what you did for them and what you did with them. Often you don't want to have lunch alone, at least half a dozen times a year. You should be sort of contacting somebody at random in the organization saying, hey, I'm interested in the work that you do. Can we get together for coffee? You want to get to know people, you want to get to know what they do, and you want to get to know their road to success. And so a lot of this comes from a very sort of professional, methodical, hey, by the way, this is how you're successful at work, and the advice is the same for everybody. And it has that quality, though, of you have to be a little bit aggressive with finding your network, finding your mentors. Once I became a group supervisor, so at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, we broke it up into a lot of different things. So this is a group supervisor, somebody who manages 10 to 20 people in an organization of several hundred, in an organization of several thousand. And I realized, like, after my first set of meetings, the most important thing that I never knew before I walked into that meeting was, it is so important that the other group supervisors know who your people are. Yeah. And so that's the first piece of advice I gave to all of my employees. The next time there's a social hour, the next time there's a picnic, you might just be thinking, don't go. I'm like, no. Go, talk, interact. The people who are just above you in the organization, if they know your name, your face, and what you do, this is a huge benefit to your career. So,
And as we start to have more opportunities to help people, one of the things that actually, it was Scott Sigler that made a point of it last night to me, he's a horror fiction writer, advocating for women is something that's very important to me, but he does it in a way that doesn't call attention to it, but is more subtle. He makes sure he has strong female characters in his books. And there's lots of ways that you can advocate for women by simply trying to introduce cultural change. If you are running a conference, you can have women and make a point. If you're writing things, if you're narrating things, bring in the female voices. What examples do you guys have of either having people open doors for you or being able to open doors for others to advocate for women while also just being a good human?
Not me first.
Kim?
I'll let Trina go. She's grabbing the
mic. No. I was just... You go. So I guess, I guess I didn't realize it at the time when it happened, right? So that was one of those things where I was just oblivious to it. But I did have several people in the organization who looked at me and thought, okay, this is somebody that, to mentor and support. And when they opened a door for me, it was unrealized at that point, but now looking back on it, I'm like, wow, that was a real opportunity that they let me have at that time. And so a lot of times I think you're oblivious to it when you're early in your career, then in the middle of your career, like, oh wow, that's what happened. And now as I'm more aged in my career, now I'm the person who gets to open the doors for others, and so it's a little bit more deliberate now on my part.
Really the best I can come up with is just, sounds kind of cocky, but leading by example, I guess, mm-hmm. because all of my shows and all of my jobs, I've kind of gotten there myself, and I've always been able to say, you know, if you're passionate about something, if you love doing something, just start doing it. Like, if you love talking about tech, just, you know, start doing a Google Hangout podcast every week. If you love, you know, doing a video show, hop on YouTube and start making a video show. That's hard because then you get YouTube comments, but, you know, it's like,
don't read YouTube.
Don't read this. Just don't read. Do you guys all follow Don't Read the Comments on Twitter? Because it is the best. It is like a daily affirmation of how bad comments are and you should never read them. But yeah, I think I have had, you know, younger women say, like, you know, I watched your show, it was really fun, and now we're doing our own book club podcast, or now we're doing our own technology thing. I'm just like getting together with my girlfriends or with my guy friends too, and we're just talking tech. And that always makes me really happy because, you know, just by doing, you're showing other people that that is an avenue that is open to them.
Anything else? Or do we want to open for questions?
Yeah, let's take some questions.
Okay. So
there's an orange box somewhere.
We will hurl a microphone at you.
Literally, hurl.
Person in the back corner. Her hand went up first.
Okay.
Yeah, he's going to throw it to you. There you go.
Black circle. Talk to the black circle.
Talk to the black circle.
Yeah, we hear you.
It's magic. Electronics.
So I am the only female in a technical position in my company. And I find it difficult to communicate to other females in the company. Like, it's literally a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple times I've come across women who seem like allies, but then will throw you under the bus.
That's the thing I was talking about earlier. Yeah, it's rampant.
How do you overcome that?
I think, gosh, that's a really good question. I think not stooping to that level, you know, I think also being really honest. Like, I think nothing throws someone off more than you coming up and be like, listen, you're being a dick. Like, let's talk it out. And someone has done that to me before. You know, I was being kind of difficult and on a project one time, and someone came up to me and was like, listen, you know, this is affecting things. And I was like, okay, I totally get it. And it was smoothed out afterwards. Like, I saw then what I was doing. So maybe they just don't realize what they're doing because, you know, they're, you know, even if they're in a different position, a non-technical position, you know, they're still at a tech company. So they probably feel the need to work that much harder to make themselves known, to kind of get the recognition they need, to kind of, you know, put their name out there. So maybe they're feeling like they have to do that in order to succeed. And you can just be like, listen, we can work together on this. Let's make both of our lives easier and more productive. And, you know, it may cause trouble. You may want to go through HR. I don't know. But, you know, if you feel like you have the opportunity to talk it out, that might not be a bad thing to do.
And yeah, the knowing who your advocates are, and this is one of those situations where sometimes you always have to be aware of who the queen bees are. And it goes back to high school. You never leave high school.
There's also an element I've noticed in technical companies, and I think it's a bit of startup culture where the developer is God and all hail the developer. So if you're in a non-technical position, you might be the one expected to do dishes or something. I've seen this firsthand where even I fell into that trap where I was like, well, I'm busy like writing code, so if she takes care of that, that's probably better. I think sometimes that comes from a place of, I don't want to use the word insecurity because that's so loaded, but I think it comes from sometimes, I don't know about in your instance, sometimes it comes from feeling left out, like you're not a part of like the really valued part of the team. So that can even just be like a culture problem that can be slow, but if you start being like too nice to her, it's never gonna hurt because other people might realize, sometimes I take that person for granted, or you know, maybe you have multiple people that are doing this, but I think there's kind of two sides to the coin where you might be the only technical woman on the company, and she might feel like she's the only not, and she might feel like, well, she's probably valued more because she's doing the harder job. So I've seen that happen more than once.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess I usually fall back on sort of professional behavior, right? We'll get you out of a lot of trouble a lot of times. So it's like, okay, somebody's not engaging in a way that's productive. It's like, okay, fine. When we're in meetings, I'm professional. I don't chit chat with them outside, and you know they're not part of it. And then I just make sure that I kick her ass or his ass, depending, in the technical side, right? That so if you do your job so much better than the other person, who's then you win. Not that it's
that's another way of doing it. Yeah.
It's all competitive or anything, but so you just you know, quality, quantity, timeliness, man, right? You just focus in very specifically on the technical work and do it so much better that will move you out of that place into a better place.
I think there's a lot more questions too.
With the Pokemon on the shoulder. It's all right. It was identifiable.
Yeah. It is identifiable. He's cute. So you mentioned earlier about being mistaken as the instructor instead of the... My problem is that I am the instructional technology integrationist at my school, so I'm both. And our entire administration is men. So I have male principal, male assistant principal, and the IT guy who's in charge of all the technology is a guy who will not listen to anything the women say. So every teacher in the school has to treat them like, you know, you get more bees with honey thing. But I can't do that. It drives me nuts. I refuse to go, would you please fix this? I won't do it. My big question is, how do you get around that when every other teacher in the school who's a woman is too scared to do anything else? Like, they will not question it. Like, I have to sit there and I teach the teachers how to use the technology, which is great. But if something goes wrong with it, they want me to fix it. And I did for the first year. And then I was yelled at by the principal that I'm not supposed to be the one fixing it. He has to.
Hmm.
So I get back lost in that little.
Go over his head. Fuck him.
Well, usually I fix it anyway.
Yeah.
Usually I walk in and fix it. And I just kind of like look at teachers and go, shh.
But I mean, at a certain point, you have to earn people's respect, and sometimes that means saying, look, if I don't get it right, and I'm faster since I'm right here, I'll go get him. And so you have to do the, let me see if I fuck it up first, and prove to them over and over and over again, no, I actually can do this. And what I have found is a lot of those individuals, once they realize that there's someone they don't have to give honey to, they're happier. Do other people have other feedback?
Well, I guess, you know, no matter where you work, you're always going to work with an asshole.
Yeah.
And the thing that you have to realize, and it took me a long time to realize this, I work with a guy named Chuck Kirby. Not that we're giving names, but he's an asshole. And
it's recorded. It's recorded.
Oh, sorry.
We will have to bleep that.
We'll have to bleep that out. But anyway. Sorry about that. But anyway, he's like this to everybody. It doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman. And so you can't change him. You have to change you. And even if you don't like it, you have to, you know, change yourself. And just what doesn't work is being yourself and thinking they're going to change. So what I do with him is I just go in when I have to have interactions with him, because he's a lead on this one thing that I work on, and he's not management, but he's the lead person. So you just have to change yourself. So what I do is I go in there with my question. Is this okay if we do X? And he says yes, and I leave. What wasn't working was trying to be his friend or trying to get him to listen to me. If I had new ideas on how to change things, a process, he wasn't going to listen to that. It wasn't because I was a woman, it's just because I'm not him. So I just stopped trying to improve the process, did the process like it was, made any, you know, changes that I could that weren't, you know, to the overall thing. And then I just really limited my interactions with him. And then if I really did think something needed to be done, I would go around him, because there were other people that he did listen to. And so I would give that idea to someone else, and then they could go to him with it, and then things would get done. I didn't get any credit, but I also didn't get, like, weird stuff on my annual review about how Kim is just difficult to work with. So, but he'll never watch this podcast or whatever. Because he's an asshole.
Go up here.
Which one?
On the end here, yeah. Power Rangers.
Yay.
Got it. All right, cool. Thanks. This has been a really, really, really good panel, so thanks a lot for having it. I'm kind of in a unique position because I am a technical trainer for finance, so I work on IMS systems, systems, all that good stuff. But I have to explain that more technical side of things and put it into, like, real English for other people. So I'm in a unique position because the bulk of my department is women. Like, all of the leadership is women. There are very, very, very few women on my team. And in the wider company, it's a very even 50-50 split, which is nice. But when we go to client sites, it's very traditional banking, you know, bankers everywhere, suit and tie, all that good stuff. And so I run into situations where, you know, I've been working with them trying to set up the session for like weeks at a time. And then I get there and they go to my white female counterpart coworker and they're like, oh, hi, Danielle, how's it going? I was like, no, that's me. So what can I do to kind of avoid that on the front end? Because I've even tried to do the, yeah, I'll be wearing a black shirt. And I'll look, black shirt. Huh, well, you're supposed to be here at 9 o'clock. I'm like, I was here at like 8:45. So what can I do on the front end to try to prevent
this
that?
This is going
to
sound like the stupidest solution, and I hate saying it works, but sometimes you have to simply invest in the power suit that makes you clear. You are a woman who rocks it, and I am a flip-flops and jeans and t-shirts kind of girl who realized I could pull off Veronica Hand because I owned a kick-ass black wool suit. And the reason I own this suit is for when I have to go and deal with my university administrators. And if I walk into the room dressed to the nines carrying the Coach bag I got because that matters to other humans, it's an unfortunate truth that in many walks of life you have to say, oh shit, I have to save up to buy this outfit I'm going to hate wearing and this purse that seems really stupid. I actually do like my Coach purse, but because you have to meet their expectations of what you're supposed to look like.
I would just say, just march right up to them, shake their hand, and say, hey, I'm Danielle. I'm here to fix your shit today.
And you need the, yeah.
You know, just like before they even have the chance to get it wrong, just be like, be more assertive. I think, you know, you just have to put yourself out there and, you know, let them know what's up.
The meeting expectations thing is very effective because what it does is it removes a lot of barriers.
Yeah.
And then you can very quickly get to an efficient working relationship. And sometimes the barriers are unexpected, right? But that's one of them. I agree with that is a technique that I have seen work more than many others. It's very effective.
Thanks.
I'm going to ask the guy with the blue shirt who's been trying so hard.
Ooh, good throw.
Okay, hey. All right, so I work in the software development industry, and I work on this trade floor of like 200 developers, and I can think of maybe 3 women, right? But we love having women on our team because I feel like there's a fundamental difference between men and women. And when we have a woman in our groups, in our meetings, in our discussions, they bring something different to the table that a group of 10 men aren't going to come up with, right? So I'm wondering, on one hand, what are we looking for in the change that we're looking for? Are we looking for some sort of equality or understanding or combination of that? And what can we do in our field to encourage women to let them know, hey, we actually want you to come work here. Please don't feel like we don't want you, because we do.
I don't think we have time to answer all of those questions. But I will tell you, one thing that I hear over and over is, we would love to hire more women developers. They're just not applying. And there's multiple reasons for that. Definitely the supply chain is a little lacking there. But one thing that you'll notice, especially if you are involved in hiring at all at your company, is men, if they see anything on the job listing that they recognize, like a term, they're like, I could probably get that job, and they'll apply completely unprepared. If a woman sees one thing that she's like, I don't know what that is, she's like, ooh. Mm. So you have to actively seek out diversity candidates, because you're only going to get one if they are perfectly aligned with everything you do. Making it clear that you can learn on the job. We value learning. We care much more about your ability to learn than what you are carrying in your head right now. So that's the very, very short version of the answer, is they're not going to come to you.
That's a great answer.
You have to go find them.
That's very true.
Last question time.
Right here.
Thank you. So I'm in college right now and for engineering, and I'm outnumbered 8 to 1, and kind of piggybacking off his thing was I learned by failure, like trial and error and stuff like that, but I have to fight so hard to be heard in my class, like just to be considered like valid, you know, where, so how would you combat like where I learned by failure, so how would you go back to I have to like validate myself every single time again, every time I fail. So how would you combat that in school?
So NASA with the Mars Curiosity lander brought out a new motto, we dare mighty things.
That's stolen from Theodore Teddy Roosevelt.
Okay, NASA stole it ruthlessly. I learned it from Mars Curiosity.
They stole it, and everywhere they use it, even though I work on Curiosity now, they never give it credit.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Okay.
And you should look up the entire quote, because it's very beautiful.
So NASA plagiarized Teddy Roosevelt.
Spread the word.
And it used to be that NASA's big motto was... failure is not an option, which is something they should never have printed on a dishwasher not safe water bottle, because that's just irony. And I've heard several people, including Elon Musk, talk about we must have failures in order to succeed. And to center yourself in the look at how many Kitty Hawk airplanes crashed, look at how many computers failed to make it on the market, look at all of these failures that have always moved us forward. If we don't dare mighty things, we can't drill holes on Mars.
Well, you learn a lot more from your failures than you do your successes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, the times when our groups up at JPL and our missions, the times that we're tested, and when we learn what we don't know and we learn how much we do know is when we have anomalies, when things go wrong, when things go exactly like they're supposed to. You can give that procedure to you know, some of the procedures we have, we give it to anybody in this room, and if everything goes exactly like it's supposed to do, you could build the whole sequence to send it up to the rover. But things usually don't go like they're supposed to. And when we have anomalies that we have to solve and fix things on our rovers on Mars or on our spacecraft orbiting Saturn, that's when we you know, that's what we work for. And it's your moment to shine, but it's also your moment to kill the spacecraft if you do it wrong.
And know that if you don't fail, you will never move our fields ahead. And so when they're playing it safe, only succeeding, you are making the world better by innovating forward. Yeah. We are out of time. I know all of us have many different things to do. Mine is another panel right now over in the Westin. So I'm going to scurry off.